folks. It's the ever slow ramp up of my iMac, and it's episode 184 of the Paleo Solution Podcast. Greg, what's going on, dude?
Not much. Just sitting here on a lovely, sunny Friday morning inside.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. That blows. we need to start doing this stuff outside when the weather gets a little bit more amenable to that.
Seriously. Once you're not going to get blown away.
Exactly. Yeah, the low gusting wind around Reno recently has been like 32 miles an hour with peaks up to like 60. And we live up at the top of this hill. So it's, we get a little wind blown.
I don't mind. I can't take Zoe outside. I don't mind snow, but wind annoys the crap out of me.
Yeah, wind is kind of annoying. Like, I can't take Zoe out some days because she literally will get, you like, tumbleweeded down the hill. So, yeah, it's fun. So what else is new? What's exciting?
Performance Menu, issue 100 is out. It's free. You can go check that out, performancemenu.com. Check out that extra big issue. Read all the articles. No cost. Get in on a subscription, though, because for the rest of this month, we're doing a bunch of giveaways. And you could, if you are smart and lucky, you could win a $500 gift card to the Catalyst Athletic Store. And that's a lot of stuff.
Nice. That is a lot of stuff. Dude, I could have wrist wraps and knee sleeves galore, man.
Yeah, although we don't sell either one of those.
Oh, well, I thought you did.
But you could buy a bunch of stuff from us, sell it, and then buy a bunch of wrist wraps and knee sleeves.
That sounds like right up the alley of my brother-in-law, actually. Like, that dude is the consummate horse trader. Every time he buys something, he's like, well, you know, I could turn around and sell it for even more on Craigslist. And I'm just like, once you factor in the amount of time you spend dicking around with that activity, it seems like it's not really worth it anymore. But he's much more excited about that type of thing. I think most people are more excited about that type of thing. I'm just lazy, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not
so
excited.
So Performance Menu, issue 100. If folks have blogs or websites and they want to become a Performance Menu affiliate, they can do that. They can sign up on the front page, right? And they get a 20%. Slice of all the action that comes through their affiliate page.
Yeah, any subscriptions that are sold that the links generate from your site or your email or wherever you posted that affiliate link, yeah, you get 20%, which if you sell a premium subscription, that's $20 for one little link.
I like it. And so, like, if you're doing some articles, say, like, on intermittent fasting or hormesis, you could link to my outstanding trend-setting articles.
Indeed.
Well, they're not really that good, but, you know, I did what I could on them. What else?
They're above average.
They're above average. They're slightly above average, yes. Let's see here. We have Well Foods. Go to wellfoods.com. Actually, it's wellfoodshq.com. Everybody's a freaking HQ, I think, these days, or wellfoodscompany.com. We'll have a banner link in there. I'm sorry, I'm a moron. I'm a part owner in the business, and I'm not even too sure what the URL is. But check it out. You can definitely buy it off of John Wellborn's websites. I know he has his banners up, so you can go check that out. But you know, everything from grass-fed whey protein, grass-fed jerky. We have some wolf snacks coming out. We're going to have a keto pack and a post-workout pack that is pretty legit. We have some other schnazzy little items rolling out with Well Foods. We also have frontdeskhq.com. FrontDeskHQ is your service-based business solution. You can take payments, you know, manage all of your staff. They're going to have a skill tracking feature here before too long, which would be really gym dandy for anything from like a martial arts studio to a CrossFit gym, so that you can track and stratify people's progress, keep them in the lane that they need to be in. Front Desk HQ starts off at a very reasonable pricing level. I think it's 1% of revenue. So like if you're making $20 a month, you're paying like 20, you know, 20 cents or $2 or some such shenanigan. And what else? Oh, the Bunny Ranch. Go to bunnyranch.com. Dennis Hoff's outstanding brothel out in Carson City. Still stoked that they are a podcast sponsor. It is porn and brothels and naked chicks and stuff like that. So just keep that in mind if you do happen to cruise to the Bunny Ranch website and check them out.
Cool.
Any other sponsors? Did we forget anybody? I feel like we're forgetting something.
No, but I just checked and it's wellfoodco.com.
Wellfoodco.com. There we go. Sweet. Wellfoodcompany.com. Yes. Awesome.
All awesome. Right.
So we jump in with this intermittent fasting driving up fasting blood sugar?
Let's jump in head first. Okay. Sweet. Eric says, I've been paleo for 5 years and 100% compliant. A year ago, I switched to the lean gains protocol with only paleo foods. I went from 15% body fat to maintaining less than 8% body fat year-round with no effort. This is validated through hydrostatic body fat testing. As you can see, I'm extremely lean and hold a lot of muscle mass, but my only worry is my fasting blood glucose level. I keep track of my blood glucose, and what I have started to notice is my fasting blood glucose has started to move up with no change in diet. Should I be worried? My average morning fasting glucose level is 100 to 110, and this will sometimes get up to 124 throughout the morning. Once I eat, it falls to high 80s to high 90s. On workout days, my blood glucose post-workout is high 70s to low 80s. What should I do? Should I abandon the intermittent fasting and eat breakfast? I thought intermittent fasting is supposed to make you insulin sensitive and not resistant. I would love your input as this is worrying me. My eating schedule is as follows. Workout days, 3 days
per week. I wouldn't even read all this. I mean, there's just a zillion. I mean, if you want to read it. Do you want to read all that?
No, I'm good.
Okay. He details his eating, and it's very detailed, and props to you for doing all that stuff.
But very detailed details.
Yeah, it's very highly detailed in the details. You know, Art Devaney has talked about some elements of this, and you know, once you get down to a leaner level, well, there was one direct question in here, which is, I thought that intermittent fasting is supposed to improve your insulin sensitivity, and it does up to a point, but when you start getting very, very lean, then, and if you are fasting, then one of the things that happens is we get some peripheral insulin resistance, which is sparing glucose for the brain. If you're in ketosis, like really, really burning ketosis, then we will tend to see lower blood glucose levels because the brain and other tissues are running off of ketones instead of, blood glucose. But, some of the cool things of intermittent fasting is that it's particularly if you're doing some carb cycling, is it's one of these things that is really forcing some cellular stress adaptation. You're shifting gears between different substrates as a fuel. And I think there's some really big metabolic benefit to that. Like I talked about in my thoughts on low carb and paleo, the 3-part series, that I don't unfortunately think that intermittent fasting or ketosis is going to dramatically increase lifespan, but it might improve health span. Like you might be healthier throughout the course of the life that you're going to live, and who knows, maybe it'll stick a couple of years on the back end as well. The problem with any of this stuff always is in the dose response curve, and you know, at some point the thing that worked for you previously may not work for you now, and it fasting blood glucose above 100 is definitely concerning, and so this is where maybe circling back around and dropping some food in the AM, it'd be interesting to just do that as a baseline test. And maybe you only do intermittent fasting like 2 days a week or on non-training days or something like that. Like I don't know that it necessarily has to be an all or nothing kind of approach, but you know, because you are in this intermediate thing, like you're not 100% ketotic, but yet you're not just like doing the standard, like, 3 meals a day, you know, a whack of carbs at each meal. You're kind of in this in-between land, and it looks like we're getting kind of a stress response that cortisol is probably driving up your blood glucose, and that could be problematic over the long haul. So I would definitely play with how to get the blood glucose back down into normal levels, and then you'll just have to see how that plays with your body composition. But, you know, this is... I wrote having mentioned the performance menu deal, I wrote a piece back in 2005 talking about intermittent fasting, and there's some really, really interesting stuff, very exciting. If nothing else, what it told me is that contrary to what the bodybuilding magazines tell us, we don't need to eat 8 meals a day and avoid going into negative nitrogen balance, or we're going to lose every scrap of our muscle mass. Like three meals and a snack is probably more than enough for the vast majority of people, unless you're really in a hardcore mass gain deal or something like that. So, you know, if nothing else, intermittent fasting can just simply make your life simpler because you don't have to feel so neurotic about eating all the time. But my experience, because we were catering to a largely CrossFit kind of crowd, because of the intensity and the volume of training, I was seeing about a 50-50, rate in which intermittent fasting would help some people and it would hurt other people. And then over the long haul, I think it ends up shifting upwards, many, many more people having problems, just because, you know, if you're really getting after CrossFit, like it is, the volume and intensity is such that you need to have all your other life parameters dialed in, your sleep, your food, your de-stressing and everything. And intermittent fasting is supposed to be like a planned hormetic stressor, but you're already getting a planned hormetic stressor via your exercise. And so that's why I kind of stepped back from the intermittent fasting scene. I was actually going to do a book on it. And I know a lot of people still run with it and kind of popularize it and everything. And that's great, I think, for bodybuilders and for fitness competitor type folks. Like I think there's certainly some efficacy there. But the volume and intensity of the training is just not the same. And then again, you know, when we circle back around, do a little bit of quantified self-testing, if you're seeing problems like this, then I think you need to address it. So, Greg, does that make sense? Did that seem to kind of answer the whole thing?
That makes perfect sense.
Some route through the forest. Thank you. Thank you. You're very kind. Thank you.
Okay. This, I'm assuming gal's name is Pink Frankenstein, although I don't want to pass early judgment. Okay. Sleep after exercise. Hi, Rob and Craig. One of the things that going paleo has done for me is that at age 48, I'm playing ultimate frisbee like I'm 28. Serious speed and not so sore afterward benefits. Awesome. The problem I'm having is getting some good sleep after playing. I usually play at night in various pickup and league games since it's an after work kind of thing. This means stopping play at either 8 p.m. or 10 p.m. As a result, I find it difficult to go to sleep and stay asleep later that night. So I end up staying up later than I like and getting sketchy, twitchy sleep. Are there things that I can do to combat this phenomenon, either through drugs, food, or supplements, or some other means like, I don't know, stretching? Do I need to concentrate on a cool down? In case you don't know, the physicality of ultimate is similar to soccer. Lots of sprints and running. The podcast is a great resource and actually entertaining. Thanks. And actually entertaining.
It's actually entertaining.
Well, wait. She asked about drugs. Aren't you smoking a bunch of weed? It's ultimate.
Yeah. I figured that would be kind of part and parcel, so... Greg, you could probably comment on this because you've played around with the AM and PM training. I know for myself, like I tend to probably have my best performance on most things in the early afternoon, maybe about 3 or 4 PM. And it's still early enough in the day that I could, it doesn't seem to affect my sleep. Like even if I do some jujitsu or something like that, like I don't have problems unwinding, going to sleep. My problem for ages, and this is part of the reason why I've been doing jiu-jitsu for almost 20 years intermittently and haven't gotten all that far until the last 6 months when I've found a class that's actually either noon or before noon, is that all the time when I was doing capoeira, when I wanted to do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, these things, and possibly because they're Brazilian run, I don't know, and not all that organized most of the time, is that they would start at like 10. Or 8 p.m. and then they would wrap up at 10 unless Mestre Carrisco was having one of his meltdown moments, in which case the thing would wrap up at like midnight. And then I inevitably had some sort of a job that would get me up and at them at like 5 or 5:30, and it just wouldn't work. Like I couldn't fall asleep. I couldn't stay asleep. My heart rate was up. My body temperature was up. So I personally have found nighttime exercise to be really, really problematic with sleep. And the things that I've tinkered with include doing a cold bath after training. And sometimes this sucks miserably, but one of the key things, if you remember from the Doc Parsley podcast that we had, like if you want to do a nap during the day, then being a little warm is actually better for enhancing the productivity of that sleep. But if we want to go to sleep at night, then our body temperature needs to drop. And so doing a cold bath to kind of get your body temperature down, some magnesium, maybe a little bit of melatonin, like, or you know, I've been tinkering with, instead of doing melatonin directly, like doing tryptophan or 5-hydroxytryptophan. And the, you know, there's a couple of moving parts with this. So you could also throw in a rather large carb meal in the evening, which can help with serotonin production. You could throw some, like a gram of, or actually I would start smaller than that, maybe like 200 milligrams of tryptophan and then kind of titrate up. But take some tryptophan with a large carb meal in the evening, have some of your natural calm, take a cold bath, and that might be a good way to go. The phosphatidylserine, holy basil stuff is always kind of helpful for reducing cortisol levels. But I've you know, depending on how hard my training session was in the evening, even though those things are helpful, they're not as good as me training earlier in the day. Greg, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really noticed that much of a difference, honestly. But just because my sleep is shitty no matter what. Definitely, it takes me a little longer to wind down if I train in the evening. It just doesn't affect my ultimate sleep a whole lot, and I prefer training in the afternoon. But usually that means about like 4 to 6 or 4 to 7 or so. So it's not super late. I think if it were more like 8 o'clock, then it would be a much bigger problem. But if I train in the morning, it's usually around 10 or 11, you know, and so I'm more wound down, but the problem is that I coach the lifting team from about 4 to 7 too. And so if I do train in the afternoon, I'm training with them, but even if I don't train, then I'm coaching them. So I'm all amped up from that anyway. So it's kind of a lose-lose for me. And so Pink's situation here is that obviously she can't ask these guys to rearrange the game schedules to 7 a.m. So I think it's just about trying to have a good routine. And I do think that, you know, having a pre-bed routine, like doing a little stretching and foam rolling, reading instead of TV, computer, phone, any of that stuff.
Low lights.
Yeah, but where you do have a routine, and so it's this thing that your body's accustomed to. Like, okay, well, I go play Ultimate, and then when I get home, I eat, I stretch, I read this book, and then I go to sleep. And I think I should be a sleep expert at this point, but I'm not. But I think the more of a routine you have, the easier it is for you to fall asleep and sleep better consistently. So stuff like holy basil or phosphatidylserine, anything that's theoretically going to help kind of lower cortisol and just help you wind down. GABA is another one that can and help sometimes, I think, that's helped me in the past. Throwing those in on your, in your pre-bed supplements, you might find some help from that too.
Cool.
All right.
I like it.
Let's see here. Jay says, "You guys are great. I finally caught up to all your episodes. Thank you so much for your time and solid work. I've been slowly trying to get my diet close to perfect paleo, but I still crack on pizza and beer from time to time. Okay, beer daily."
I would if I could.
As a UPS driver in Phoenix, my job consists of doing 160 to 185 stops per day, carrying packages from anywhere from 1 to 150 pounds. I'm 6 feet, 175 pounds, athletic build. I never feel too exhausted toward the end of the day, but I'm still looking to optimize my diet and energy with your expertise. Keeping in mind the 110-degree summer heat with no air conditioning, a grilled steak doesn't exactly sit well in the gut during the Phoenix summer heat. What are some of the most ideal foods for all-day sustained energy? I currently eat about 30 grams of protein every morning through bacon and eggs. Throughout the day, I drink tons of water and snack on raw broccoli and celery, taking sips of coconut oil and handfuls of almonds, another 30 grams of protein from beef jerky, and finish off the afternoon with one banana. Then at dinner, I usually get not-so-paleo and have another 1,500 to 2,500 calories. Also, what workouts would help with my work performance? I currently box and do Muay Thai 2 to 3 times per week, but I've been feeling a little too worn down from these intense workouts. Maybe looking for something a little less intense. What are some of the injuries or problems I should keep a close watch for that might be related to this type of work? Lastly, sorry for the length, please don't hate me. Does ZMA have any benefits? I've noticed some deeper dreams and better sleep, I think. Thanks, guys. P.S. Just think you will be doing the world a service when I pass the word on to all the other drivers. Everyone will get their packages quicker from all the healthy and energy charged drivers.
I'll tell you what, Jay, in exchange for us answering this question, then you need to get us an audience with UPS headquarters for the risk assessment program.
There you
go. That'll be the deal. Just contact Squatchy and get us the hookup. Let's work our way backwards. ZMA, beneficial. We think so. seems to help. I mean, it's one of these things that, zinc magnesium combo seems to help a ton of people. Sleep seems to be a little bit more deep and intense. I've kind of shifted to just using natural calm, and I eat a lot of liver and organ meats and stuff like that, and I feel like I'm getting plenty of zinc from that. So I'm probably squared away there. What are the injuries or problems I should keep a close watch on? I would say low back and knees. Greg, thoughts?
Yeah, probably.
And we see this with cops even more so. I think because of the way that the seat is with a UPS truck, you're sitting up a little bit higher, like your hips are a little more open and everything. So I don't think it's as gnarly a situation. But we see this with cops where they'll go in and out of the car, and they go from a scrunch position to kind of an opened up position. Their hip flexors get tight, hamstrings get tight, and then we start reefing on the low back. And our pelvis, if it's mobile, if our hips are properly mobile, if we were to put like those motion sensor dots that when they're doing a CGI stuff, if we were to put one right on the sacrum and then right on the hips, the sacrum should really kind of maintain its elevation, and whereas the hips are the ones that are kind of processing up and down for the most part. But when the low back gets tight, when the hips and when the hip flexors and the hamstrings get tight, the low back actually starts getting a lot more movement. The spine starts getting a lot more movement. And this has kind of almost a mortar and pestle type activity on like the L4, L5 discs and on the vertebra themselves. And we see a lot of problems arise for folks with this. So, I mean, maintaining, hamstring and hip flexor mobility, lots of death stretches, lots of probably weighted hamstring stretches would be in order with that. Some of the IT band foam rolling. Ito has some cool stuff where he will stand with his feet together, and then let's imagine that you are standing with your feet are together. You're standing next to like a bench. And the bench is maybe about knee high, or maybe a little bit lower than knee high. But the bench would be, next to your right knee. You're facing the length of the bench, and then Ito will corkscrew and sit down on the bench carefully. And basically, what you're doing is you're loading the connective tissue in a generally what would be regarded as not orthopedically sound way, but you're doing it in a progressive, safe manner. And so he will load this over time. And so it's always great to work on perfect form and everything, but there's some argument to be made for doing some activities in a safe, reasonable, controlled manner that is not our orthopedic optimum to get some soft tissue integrity. You know, like Ito does some pretty cool stuff where he walks around with his feet completely pronated, I guess, or supinated, I guess, and walking on the outer edges of his feet to kind of protect against tendon and ligament damage. So there's some cool stuff out there with that regards. Greg, could you think of anything else for the bulletproofing of a UPS driver?
Yeah, I would definitely be doing some basic strength training instead of just boxing and Muay Thai. I don't know that you need a ton of conditioning. I mean, it's good to be able to like fight people off who are trying to steal your packages, I guess. But
that's what a gun is for.
Yeah. I think that doing the basic barbell lift, so you are developing as much strength as possible around the joints, like the knees, the lower back, the shoulders, all that kind of stuff that is going to take a pounding. I think the more of that you can do, the better off you're going to be. And obviously, you don't want to gain a bunch of weight because you don't want to be 6 feet 220 running around all day in 110 degree weather. But I think if you can, you know, you probably would put on like 5 pounds or so. And I think that could be a lot of some helpful muscle tissue around those joints and give you a little bit of a kind of body armor effect. And I think also, you know, being very good at squatting and deadlifting and pressing and, you know, even power cleans, things like that is going to help you kind of move a little bit more effectively and safely while you're actually working. So I think it'll be protective all around.
I think probably like, 3 to 4 days a week, 150 med ball cleans for time and certainly not to exceed a 6 pound weight in the med ball would be possibly the most beneficial thing you could do.
Dude. So there's this, I think I've mentioned this before, but there's this gym in the same, like the back of their place is in the same parking lot as us. They went in about a year or two ago, just goofballs. They were doing wall balls, but bringing the ball down behind the neck. And they already don't know how to squat or anything. And so it was basically just like a ballistic, it was like a, you know, a hacky sack. It was like catching the hacky sack behind your head, but with, you know, a 20 pound ball just as hard as possible in like a horrible round back good morning position. It was fucking incredible. And wow. Someone's over there paying for that. So
you silly
it's
kids.
It's not just CrossFit gyms that have this problem.
You silly kids. Oh boy. Oh man. What else here? So definitely food too. Yeah. You know, the food, the only thing that I would see with, like, I definitely get, you know, you're physically active throughout the day and don't want a big hunk of food weighting you down, especially when it's, you know, hot enough to cook your food on the asphalt. The only thing, like he says that if in the evening he has like 1,500 to 2,500 calories, which I'm assuming is a pretty good hoss-fest of food. My only thought with this is that when he's describing everything, it's really low carb. And so maybe some more fruit or yams or sweet potatoes somewhere in there, but he doesn't really describe the composition of that final meal. So I think it's about half beer,
so that's good carbs.
Yeah, so maybe he's squared away on that. So you know, that's the only other thought that I would have is particularly if doing the fight training is really leaving you knackered, then you just may be a little too low carb throughout the whole process. So that's probably the only other thought that I would have in there. I definitely get that when you're on your feet and you're really active and it's hot, like you don't want to eat a lot of food. And, you know, as much as I forget if I mentioned this on a podcast already or if I was just talking to Greg or talking to somebody else, but, you know, I like all the carb backloading stuff. I dig all of it, but it'll be interesting to see how people do with that. Like we had the question about the sleep quality earlier regarding the Frisbee, but I've noticed that if it's warm outside and I have a large meal, I have a hell of a time falling asleep. If I have that meal late in the evening, because your metabolic rate goes up and your body temperature goes up after you eat a meal, to say nothing of a larger meal. And then if it's already warm outside, that's kind of problematic. And I think that that's some of the reason why we see more of a siesta type of phenomena in locations that are, you know, more equatorial, where you eat that larger meal early in the day, which interestingly, Doc Parsley mentioned that you actually sleep better during the day when you take a nap, when the body temperature is higher, but we need the body temperature to go down. So all that stuff, you know, the whole point of that is it'll be interesting to see if people doing kind of a carb backloading in the warmer times of the year, if they have any type of sleep problems with that. Oh, it'll be kind of interesting to see that. So,
well, all right.
Largely unrelated to that question, but that's where my random access brain went. So that's there we okay. go.
All right. Paleo and Addison's disease slash shift work. That was a tricky one. Hi, Rob and or staff. Bought your book and enjoying it so far. This is a question about how paleo might affect Addison's disease. Basically, my adrenal glands are raisins and have been for many years. They produce nothing. I suspect autoimmune was the cause, as I've had on and off bizarre things happening to my health all my life. These things come and usually go. About 10 years ago, my strange symptoms got so bad, I began to search out an answer for what was going on. since the docs were mystified and just wanted to throw pills at me, which was basically occasional small seizures of unknown origin and horrid digestive problems. During a seizure, I could not even keep to my feet, but had to drop into a squat and belch, belch, and belch. Great for socializing. After I tried a good probiotic, the seizures went away, but I still felt pretty lousy a lot of the time. Then I stumbled upon The Paleo Diet by Cordain. The ideas in the book made perfect sense to me, and my health and vitality improved greatly over time. I sort of drifted off course over the last few years, eating all sorts of bad things, especially while on the road. But I'm back to the paleo way now. I'm a locomotive engineer on call 24/7. Not even shift work, just get called for a train whenever it shows up. One day it'll be noon, the next 2 a.m., then 3 p.m., and so on. Once in a while, you get caught short with no sleep when no one shows up that is not on the lineup for whatever reason, and you can be awake for 30 to 35 hours straight. I do have ridging in my nails, even though I'm eating paleo again, so I'm really interested in your ideas about hypoacidity and shift workers. This is probably not the best job for someone with Addison's to have, but I have stood the gaff so far for 19 years. Of course, I have to take a cortisol steroid as replacement therapy for missing adrenaline, and I'm currently mucking about my bloodstream with my endocrine doc to see if I can get rid of my mineral corticoid replacement for missing aldosterone, which we think is giving me high blood pressure. Anyhow, obviously an unhealthy lifestyle, which I try to manage as best I can. Interested in your thoughts since you know so much about biochemistry. I bet I'm the only Addisonian who ever contacted you. Just interested in your thoughts if you can spare the time. Thank you for what you are doing with your work. It's helping a lot of people.
Gosh, it's a great question, and I fear I'm not going to have a whole lot to offer because the Addison's is a really complex disease to manage. And gosh, what do I want to say? I mean, clearly, whenever we feed and water ourselves better, then we're generally going to be healthier. And so, I mean, I think that you've already experienced that when your food was more dialed, you were feeling better. As you get older, the sleep deprivation is going to become more and more of an issue. Titrating off the aldosterone, see, if you're just not producing any, that seems almost impossible. Like, you might be able to titrate down lower, particularly if you're having some high blood pressure issues, but it seems unlikely that you're going to be able to go off the stuff entirely. The ridging might be from a malabsorption issue. The deal with with the Addison's is the cortisol modulates immune function, and all of that immune function, we start with like secretory IgA and then start working towards other elements of the innate immune system and then the adaptive immune system. And if we get a breakdown in that line, then we have some gut permeability, potentiality. When we're under stress, we tend to see some hypochloridia in people. So something like a Now Food super enzyme or like a Paleologics Adaptogest might be helpful in that regard to help you just digest your food better. But this is just a complex situation. Under the best of circumstances, like if you had, gosh, what's an analogy here? Because, the shift work is such a gnarly impact on adrenal function just as a baseline. So this is kind of like a situation like if we had a type 1 diabetic that your job was to convert glucose into CO2. you showed up for your 8 or 10 hour shift and we plugged a line into your jugular and we just started pumping glucose through your body. And your job was to use your metabolism to convert that glucose into CO2 and water, run it through the metabolic process. That would be horrible because you don't endogenously produce insulin. And so we're going to have to manage that situation with some sort of exogenous source and even things like insulin pumps. Like, we're getting closer where some of these blood glucose sensors tied to an insulin pump are actually getting fairly dynamic. So like they start seeing the blood glucose go up and they'll titrate out a little bit of insulin and the blood glucose goes down and they suppress the insulin production. So it starts looking more and more like a legitimate pancreas. But let's assume that we don't have that and we just have to rely on dosing this stuff like a once a day or a two times a day insulin bolus. This would be a horrible job for this person. It sounds like a horrible job no matter what, unless I guess you could just eat all the glucose in the form of like Twinkies or something like that. But the sleep deprivation plus Addison's fudge, Like that is really, really hard. And I don't know if you've got like a pension option at year 20, like you said in your notes that you've been on the gaff for 19 years. Like if you've got even a marginal pension at year 20 and you've got your finances in order and can withstand going into a different line of work and doing something else, I would do that because I don't, you seem to have like potentially the two worst kind of flavors of two things that you could bring together. The Addison's, which is this adrenal dysfunction, the adrenal insufficiency plus highly disordered sleep. And that just seems like a gnarly bugger to deal with. But, you know, as always, whenever we're facing challenges, sleeping to the best of your ability, getting out and getting some sun, trying to keep your vitamin D levels high via sun exposure, if you can at all do that, be active to the degree that it seems to make you feel better, but doesn't cause inroads into your recovery. And then to the degree you do sleep, like sleep as well and as often as best as you can. But I don't have much beyond that other than plan an exit strategy, man. Like quick.
Okay. I'm glad you had something on that one because I have absolutely nothing to offer other than trains are cool.
Sweet.
It's like some good old school engineering stuff.
Yeah. It
makes me feel good inside. Okay. Lactose and now food super enzymes. Rebecca says, "Hi, I recently discovered your amazing podcast. I've listened to about 50 of the first episodes, plus the new ones that come out once a week. So I'm sorry if this has been covered before. First question. I ordered the Now Food Super Enzymes capsules from Amazon UK because they have been warmly recommended by both you and the whole nine. When I received them, this was written on the label below the other ingredients list. Contains sulfites, may contain lactose, milk as a processing aid. I emailed the company regarding this because I'm pretty sure I have a lactose intolerance. Used to get 7-month pregnant bloated after drinking a small latte. And I also have psoriasis, so I'm completely avoiding dairy. This was their reply. It is a tiny amount of lactose used as a processing aid for pancreatine, and the sulfites come natural as part of the pineapple. Both are small and well-tolerated by most, but your concerns would indicate that a milk and sulfite-free formula such as the following would be a better choice. And there's a link to that product. Checking out the label on those vegan enzymes, I could see that they don't contain betaine hydrochloride nor pepsin or pepsain. Is that what she's trying to say? What is it?
Papain. No, papain okay. is right.
Added lactase and a bunch of other enzymes not included in super enzymes. So I replied that this blend would work better for vegans rather than paleo folks. Why would I need lactase when I don't consume any dairy? And I said I could try their betaine hydrochloride with pepsin capsules instead. Do you think I should avoid the super enzymes because of the lactose? And if so, should I buy their hydrochloride plus pepsin capsules plus separate supplements to add in bromelain and papain? Would become 3 bottles of supplements in total. Or could you recommend any other broad spectrum enzymes that are lactose free? Just a quick update. Got a reply from Now Foods after asking why the milk and sulfates aren't listed on their website. Hello, that is older information. We'll get this over and update that. Thanks for catching it. So it seems like they'll be changing the info on the label in the US as well.
Man. So, you know, my gut sense on this is that the lactose content is going to be tiny, like even far, far, far less than what you would get from a latte. But here it is. It's not my potential bloat that I'm dealing with. So, you know, I guess it's a little bit, easy for me to say, well, just give it a shot. I think that probably the biggest thing that you're going to want out of any of this stuff is the, the betaine hydrochloride plus pepsin, papain, you know, however they go with that. Usually it's betaine hydrochloride plus pepsin. So I would just give that a shot and start with that. And if you somewhere down the road or if you have a bottle of the Now Foods and you just want to give those a shot and see if you react to them, then, you know, I guess you could take them back or you could give them away or save them for like a zombie apocalypse when you have to eat zombie meat and really want some digestive support with that. So I would maybe start the safe, simple one first. And then if you want to experiment, like I really, really doubt that the amount of lactose that you would experience in the Now Food super enzymes would be problematic, but I could be wrong. Like I'm mega gluten intolerant, and so maybe there's something similar going on there with the lactose. Although usually, even people who legitimately produce no lactase at all, a really, really small amounts of lactose, like they just are processed by the gut bacteria and they don't produce enough gases to create that bloating and the discomfort and everything. So I don't know. It should be okay, but
yeah, again, I can't imagine that there's enough in there to cause any problem. Like unless you take the entire bottle, in which case you're going to have other problems.
Right.
All right. Personally, I would give it a shot. Sweet. Okay. Probiotics for babies. Rachel says, I wanted to check your thoughts on probiotics for babies and if you gave your darling girl any. We have a six-week-old girl, and she had to be on antibiotics in hospital for a few days when born. We did not want this, but hard to argue when doctors are pushing it and scaring us on what ifs if we didn't get her on them. We eat paleo about 80% strict and are gluten-free 100% and dairy-free about 90%, if any of that matters. Dairy is just some hard cheese and Greek yogurt on occasion. We do baby vitamin D drops too. Just wondering what would Rob do as always and couldn't find anything on it when I looked online. Thanks in advance and hope you are all well and enjoying spring.
Yeah, you know, our experience with Zoe has been a pretty good eye-opener. Like for whatever reason, the little bugger really did not latch very well. So Nikki probably 80 or 90% of the time ended up pumping, and she pumped for 9 months, which was a party. And then Nikki started having some problems with that. And then we started looking around for some alternatives, and we found a goat milk protein formula that was recommended online. And there's some turbinado sugar and like coconut oil and a couple other things that are in it. And so we gave that a shot, and Zoe liked it, and she had zero GI upset, no, didn't bat an eye transitioning to it. Like she seemed to do great. And this was right at the time when she started doing some solid food. So, you know, I was not super concerned about like not getting enough DHA, folate and stuff like that, because luckily one of the first things that she really, really liked was meat. So that was kind of legit. But one of the things that was in the formula was a powdered baby probiotic. And I can't for the life of me remember what it was. It was like a Nature's Way. The stuff is refrigerated. It's specifically for kids. I'm sure it's got some sort of a dairy base to it. It seems like it did, but she seemed to do great on that. I mean, you know, knock on wood, and every kid is different, and you know, I'm just learning that you can only ascribe so much to like what you're doing with regards to the diet and you know how good or bad the kids are doing, and then some to genetics. Like we've just been really lucky with Zoe in that her teething's been a bugger. Like she really has a lot of discomfort with her teething, but like she's never, knock on wood, never had GI problems, never really had colic. Poops are bountiful and seem easy with her, you know. So we've been really lucky with that. Whereas my sister-in-law Chrissy, she has fed herself, breastfed her little one, Riley. And Riley's had a little bit of GI problems, and we don't really know what the deal is. Chrissy's Riley has been more reactive, like if Chrissy has had some dairy in her diet or something. Nikki rarely has any dairy, but if she does, like Zoe doesn't seem to react to it. So, I mean, you see two kids that are reasonably tightly linked genetically and reasonably similar dietary approaches, and one of them's working real well for one, and the other one's having a little bit of problems. So that's all just interesting, kind of off the reservation compared to the original question. But yeah, we did use a little bit of probiotics. If the kid's breastfeeding though, like the kid is getting probiotics from the mom all the time. So, I mean, you could throw some probiotics in, but I think that the wee one is probably fine just doing regular breastfeeding and just, you know, full steam ahead with that.
Cool. All right, this subject line could be interpreted in two different ways. getting my swole on ways, while yes. nursing. Lindsay says, hi, Robin.
The booby fairy has arrived.
I've read that nursing can, perhaps counterintuitively, be a good time for strength training since a woman's body is producing a lot of some kind of growth hormone for the breast milk. Some disagree, saying that other hormones produced during this time negatively impact training. Do you have any thoughts, assuming adequate sleep and nutrition, granted a big assumption after the arrival of a baby? Thanks, and thanks for the podcast.
You know, I did a lot of digging around on this, and it's kind of funny. The primary literature on this topic, or I wouldn't even call it literature, but commentary on this topic, is that breastfeeding is like doing exercise because you burn 500 calories a day doing it. So that's kind of the main thing that I tracked down. You know, unlike the first trimester of pregnancy where women get a legitimate kind of performance bump, I haven't seen anything that indicates that breastfeeding is like, you know, being on performance enhancing drugs because of the change in hormones. So I would put a negative on this. I wouldn't say that it's going to be bad to train during breastfeeding, not by any means, but I don't think you're going to get any of that performance boost like what you see in early pregnancy.
Yeah, I guess I don't really understand the question, because if you're not going to have some huge performance boost, does that mean you're not going to train? Like, why don't you just...
I guess, you know, sometimes people will really get after it when they get pregnant because they know that they're going to get a performance bump and they just try to ride that hormonal boost a little bit, I guess. So I don't know. Hmm. I don't know.
Okay, well, I would just try to get swole. Mm-hmm. Regardless.
Seriously. Okay. Get your pump on, sisters.
Yeah. Leslie says, hi, Rob. For the last 2.5 months, I've been eating a grain-free, dairy-free, legume-free diet. I do still drink black coffee and tea on rare occasion, have a glass of red wine. I eat at least 3 meals a day, which include protein, vegetables, or sweet potato, healthy fat. However, when I snack, I don't always have protein and usually stick to fruit and almonds. I've been working out on my own regularly at the gym for at least 6 months. I take 2 spin classes a week, and I also do machine weights 2 to 3 days a week. My fiance works out at a CrossFit gym where they do Olympic lifts and Metcons, and he recently set up a gym in the garage, so I asked him if he could start training me. Yeah, good luck with that. Oh, boy. If you want to actually get married, probably don't have that relationship. I told him my goal is to become stronger, and he says I should not be taking 2 spin times a week if I want to become stronger and CrossFit train. Is this true? Do you think I need to eliminate spin to become stronger? He thinks I need to eliminate my 45-minute spin classes and start CrossFit football. He claims he knows exactly what your response is going to be. He's very certain that you will agree with him because he, quote, listens to enough podcasts. I'm not sure if this matters, but I am lean.
I never know what I'm going to say, so.
I'm not working out or taking spin to lose weight. I'm 5'9" and weigh 130 pounds, 32 years old. I've noticed that over several months I've put on a little muscle weight and lost some of the little fat I did have, and I know I've become more toned over time. I also want to add that I feel fantastic after my spin class. I really enjoy it, but I'm willing to eliminate it if necessary. Thanks in advance, and I hope to hear from you.
I guess the basic deal here is just, you know, what do you want to do? And what seems like the most fun. Even if you're doing a ton of cardio, you'll get stronger doing a strength program. You may not get as strong ultimately. You may not get as strong as fast because we've got kind of competing signaling going between the strength training and the endurance work. But it's not to say that you're not going to get stronger. I think it's just being really clear about what you want to do and what the goals are and everything. And the fact that you say that you really like the spin class. And there's probably some good socialization there and you like doing that and, you know, the connectivity and everything. I would be remiss to give up the spin class. If you start doing some O-lifts and that bug really bites you and you start doing some CrossFit and that bug really bites you and you really want to go deep on that, then maybe you cut down to like 1 day a week of the spin or maybe every other week that you drop in. So you still have that connectivity and the socialization and everything. And I mean, for CrossFit, doing a 30 to 40 minute cardio class once a week is great. Like, I mean, just hitting a monostructural element for a chunk of time doesn't seem like a bad idea at all. So I, you know, really this should be up to you. Like, what do you want to do? What, you know, I think in your gut, it should be crystal clear what the decision is here. And it's just based exclusively off of what seems like a lot of fun and what do you want to do?
Yeah. I just went back and reread this and, said, I told him my goal is to become stronger. So, yeah, I think there is definitely a little confusion there. You like the spin stuff, which is fine. If you like it, you should be doing it. If you want to get stronger, like Rob said, you can still get stronger. So you're doing spin, you're doing machine weights, and now possibly you're going to do some CrossFit with your fiance. I would say that keep up with the spin if you really enjoy it. Drop the machine stuff and do some CrossFit / strength training with your future hubby. And I think that will kind of push you in that right direction without having to eliminate the stuff that you like doing. And like Rob said, 45 minutes, 2 times a week. I mean, unless you're trying to like break some world records, it's really not going to be a problem, especially if you like it.
But if you reach a point where you're really getting excited about the Olympic lifting and you want to take it to another level, then that's where, assessing the spin, and you might be like, okay, I'm going to do a contest, an O-lifting contest, so I'm going to drop the spin for 6 weeks to peak for this Olympic lifting contest. So that's where the thing could become important to need to make a decision one versus the other. But right now, if the goal is just simply get stronger and it's kind of nebulous what exactly that is, then like Greg said, if you drop the less efficient machine-based stuff, do your spin, lift some weights, get pumped, then you should be good.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Let's wrap it up talking about butts. Paleo Booty, ear 13 and ear 14 says. That's funny.
But don't ding.
Is it because he's the seventh listener?
The seventh listener, yes.
But my question is, how are the ears talking?
If you take enough psychedelics, then you can hear sights and see sounds and all kinds of stuff. So who knows?
True enough. Okay, Rob and Greg, yeah. I've been following your nutritional and fitness suggestions for a few years. Thanks for all the information you put out there. My background is as a competitive water polo player and swimmer. I've always had big glutes, thighs, shoulders, and a well-developed V-shaped body, which all make it pretty tough to find fitting clothes. I'm able to find the occasional shirt that fits my body shape, but I'm completely stumped when it comes to pants. Just don't wear pants. Here's what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
If a pair of pants fits my waist, they end up being extremely tight through the upper legs and groin. Any pants that fit comfortably through the upper legs are extremely loose to the waist and or in the lower leg. I've gone to premium stores like Nordstrom's and various jean company outlets, and none of the products they offer seem to fit me. The salesmen literally don't know where to start. Having the waist taken in and a few inches makes them fit, but they look really funny because of how it changes the wear pattern and pulls the pockets relatively more towards the side of the pants by removing fabric from the side seams. I've lost a bunch of weight and improved body comp following your advice, but it comes at the cost of not looking so great in a pair of jeans. Since I injured my knee last fall and was only able to do RDLs and stiff-legged deadlifts for 6 months, things got worse. What's a single guy to do? Any fashion advice or other ideas are appreciated. Regards, your seventh listener. I feel your pain.
You know, yeah. You know, and I learned this one off of a NPR, fashion show or something like that, where they had this very, very entertaining gay fashion dude on there. And it, basically his gig was for athletic builds. And it sounds like you've tried this, but maybe you just need a better seamstress or tailor, but you find the fabric you like, you find the thing that's going to fit the part of you that is non-negotiable, which is basically your legs and butt to some degree. And then you need to take in the waist and maybe utilize some belts. Like if my ass wasn't as big as what it is, then my pants would literally fall right to my knees. My quads are always, you know, other than like if it, once they shimmied off my quads, they'd be gone. And so I usually have to wear a belt with my jeans. Kind of similar problem, but I have taken a few nicer pairs of pants. I haven't done this with my jeans, but I'll take a few nicer kind of dress pants and I'll get the waist taken in, and they end up looking pretty solid. And basically I just have to buy them for my legs and butt and make sure that that works. And typically if it works there, then literally I'm a 28 to 30 waist, but if these things fit me in the legs and butt, then it's literally like a 36 to 38 waist that I'm buying. And so there's a pretty good chunk of fabric, like you said, that needs to be brought in off of that. But the folks that I've gone to have been pretty good, and they seem to look well. My wife still sleeps with me and everything, so it can't be too horrible. So that's about all I've got. Maybe stepping up to a better seamstress or tailor.
You just need to get pleated jeans.
Oh.
And a braided leather belt.
I'm just waiting for those to come back.
A polished silver tip. Like AC Slater. Yeah, I have the same problem. I can't find jeans to save my life, and it drives me crazy because part of the problem now is that clothes are made for either really fat people or really skinny, like emo people. And so there's like nothing in between for athletically shaped people, especially in the large legs and butt department. So yeah, like you said, you either end up with these giant freaking baggy jeans and you look like a Hauser or something, or you end up with jeans that you can't even get past your quads. And so the best that I've found is, what's the company? Lucky. I think Lucky brand.
Yeah, that's what I have
been. Yeah, decent, but it's still hard because, you know, all these jean companies now make, like, it used to be Levi's that was like 501s and that was it. And now there's like every single model number between 0 and 1,000. And then each one has, they're either like loose fit or baggy fit or boot cut or like all these different things. It's fucking impossible to like find out what's going on, and none of them fit anyway. My wife finally went to Nordstrom one day and was just like, I'm just gonna get you some jeans and we'll get them tailored. And so of course jeans there are like $8,000. So I tried to talk her out of it. She did it anyway. So out of like six pairs, there were two that even had any potential to work. And so I got those tailored, and they still don't really fit right. I still have to wear a belt, and they're still, they're still not quite big enough to fit my ass. But it's about as good as it's going to get. So I've kind of resigned myself to just not really enjoying wearing jeans. Which, fortunately, I work for myself, and I wear just like Adidas shorts and T-shirts every day, all day long. So it's a rare occasion. I was joking with my friend Mike. He's like, hey, man, you either have gym clothes or court clothes. And I said, yeah, it's pretty true. Like, I can get a suit tailored perfectly fine. It works no problem. And then, obviously, Adidas shorts are pretty easy to work with. But anything in between is tricky. So you just need you just need to look for girls who have the same problem. You know, look for other athletic girls instead of like skinny model kind of girls. And then you can commiserate, and you have that connection, and then you can build a relationship on that. See, you just got to change your approach.
Nikki was a volleyball player and had quads for days. So yeah.
Perfect. All right. Is that it? That is it.
Yeah. Well, I've got to be at jiu-jitsu in 30 minutes, and I've got about a 28-minute drive ahead of me, so I better boogie. So anything else, Craig? Anything folks can't live without for a wee bit longer?
Nope. Go get your jits on.
All right, man. Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you all soon.
All right. See ya.
Later.